This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580 and online at WILL.UIUC.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. On the program today, our monthly program about computers. Today, we welcome back to the show science and technology reporter for the News Gazette, Greg Klein. Greg also writes two columns for the newspaper about computing. They run on Mondays in the circuits section of the paper. And Computers and You is a topic we take up once a month now on the third Monday of the month. Listeners, you can join us with your questions about computers. Join us with a telephone call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455. 800-222-WILL. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks, Celeste. It's good to be here.
Well, maybe we don't have anybody waiting at the moment. So why do you say we talk a little bit about Microsoft's new operating system released now for businesses, the Vista system. When will the Home Edition come out?
Well, it should be available by the end of January. And I would imagine that by the end of January, you won't be able to ignore the fact that it is available because the Microsoft marketing machine will be in full swing. You know, I was thinking today, it's kind of amazing that it's actually been 5 years since Windows XP came out. So we've been waiting 5 years for a new iteration of Windows. You know, they used to kind of roll out every time you turned around, and they've been working on this and having some problems working on it, and finally, evidently, have those worked out and are ready to roll.
Yeah.
So by the end of January, you know, and so that there are two kinds of people then. There are people who have a computer now, and those poor people have to make the decision as to whether to upgrade or not. And then there are the people who are going to be buying a new computer. And they won't have any choice because it's going to come with more than likely with Vista in it.
Yeah. Now, what's Microsoft saying about this system? Why would we want to have it?
I think there are probably two real big things. One is the way it looks and operates. Okay, it'll be the nicest looking version of Windows you've ever seen. In fact, you probably feel a little bit like you're not working in Windows in some ways. Some people say you'll feel a little bit like you're working in Mac OS X, but we won't go there. and the other thing is security. Microsoft has done a variety of things to try and make their touting Vista as the most secure operating system ever. Maybe, maybe not. Some people are already finding some holes in it, and they will continue to do so, I would imagine. But they've taken pretty big leaps forward in trying to make the system more secure so you don't have some of the problems you might have with viruses and spyware and adware and all that good stuff that plagues Windows XP now.
Now, those little holes outside of those, what are reviewers saying about Vista?
I think that most are – I'd be probably accurate in saying that most of them are kind of unimpressed with it at this point. I've tinkered around with a little myself, and I don't know that I'm impressed. I think it's a nice version of Windows. But, you know, the advice I give to people when they ask me about it is, look, you know, as I said, if you're going to buy a new computer from the 30th on, you're not going to have any choice. It's going to have Windows Vista in it. But if you've got a fairly recent computer now, and your thought is, do I upgrade from Windows XP? I tell you no, not right now. I'd wait at least a few months until the first series of important bug fixes gets done. And as a cautious person, I'd probably wait until the first service pack comes out. That's what Microsoft calls big packages of bug fixes. And that took about 10 months with Windows XP. So I would think that you'd be best off waiting till later in the year to think about upgrading if you're going to do so in your current machine. You know, that security the security improvements they've made, and I think they are significant, but the fact is that And the problem is that a lot of people aren't diligent. But the fact is, if you've been diligent about patching Windows XP and turning off some of the security problems that, that have been identified in Windows XP, and you've gone out and you've gotten either Internet Explorer 7 for Windows XP, or you're using Firefox as your web browser, you're just about as secure with a nice updated version of Windows XP and a good antivirus program and some anti-spyware programs. You're just about as secure as you're going to be with Vista.
Yeah. Will the Home Edition come in different flavors, you know, your basic and then your, you know, souped-up
right.
edition?
That's going to be one of the confusing things for people. There are, in fact, multiple editions of Windows Vista. There are really two home editions, Home Basic, Home Premium. I think most people that have looked at it so far agree that, you know, unless you've got an older machine and you want to run Vista on it, which I don't really see the purpose in that, you probably want to get the Home Premium Edition, because the Home Basic Edition comes without a lot of the goodies that you might want to buy Vista for, including a lot of that, nice looking eye candy and system-wide search and other good things that are – it may have system-wide search in it now that I think of that. But without a lot of the niceties that are in the Premium Edition of Vista.
What are the price points on Basic and – is there a big difference?
There is a big difference. They can run anywhere from around $100 to around $300. So it does make a big difference on which version you're going to buy.
This is the Afternoon Magazine. Greg Klein of the News Gazette is with us this afternoon for our monthly discussion about computers. If you've got a question, give us a call, 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Anywhere else, toll free, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Let's take a call. We've got a listener waiting for us in Champaign on line one. Hi.
Hi. Greg, you wrote a column about 2 weeks ago on iPhoto. Somebody asked about photos on their machine. Do you remember that?
Yes.
And in there, you explained how to get it onto what I think you were talking about was a flash drive.
Well, no.
A thumb drive?
I was talking about moving your iPhoto library to an external hard drive.
Oh, not like a flash drive? Or?
No, you probably wouldn't get – well, it depends on how big your iPhoto library is. If you've got a small iPhoto library and a pretty big flash drive, you might get it on there. But this was thinking more in terms of a big iPhoto library that's taking up too much space on your internal hard drive.
Well, so far I'm doing all right, but I have some of my photos stored on a flash drive.
Uh-huh.
Can't I just move the photos to the flash drive and then plug the flash drive in and leave the iPhoto mechanism, the program on the main hard drive, and then when I plug the flash drive in, then I can activate those photos? Or do I have to actually put them back on the hard drive of the main computer?
So you want to put some but not all of your – you want to store some but not all of your photos on a flash drive.
I want to store photos but not the program.
Right.
And like sort of archive them, you know, the older ones?
Well, yeah, what you need to do is you're going to move, you have if you've left it the way it was when the OS 10 was set up, all right? There's an...
Yeah, it's an OS 10 G4 iBook.
Right, and your iPhoto library folder is in your pictures folder, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That's the way it is by default, so unless you've...
I have some elsewhere, like on the desktop, but the main ones are in the...
Oh, so not all your pictures are in your iPhoto library necessarily either?
Not all of them.
Okay.
But like the most recent ones I downloaded from a trip are on the desktop. Well, actually, yeah, they're on the desktop.
Why do you want to store some of them on that flash drive?
so I don't clutter up the hard drive.
Right, but your do you know how big your hard drive is?
Not without looking.
Okay.
It's the most recent one, this G4 that I bought it this year, but it's not the new one that has the Intel chip or whatever. But it's what the university was selling for $1,000, 14-inch screen.
Right. Well, yeah, certainly you could store some photos on that flash drive, and I believe you can tell, iPhoto to leave them there, and that's where it accesses them, right? Or you could move your entire library to an external hard drive, which is what that column was about, in order to free up space, you know, in your internal hard drive, okay?
That's like having a second hard drive, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Which is, so how is that different from a flash drive? I know it is, but.
Well, depending on how many photos do you have in your library, do you know?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, here's what I'd say is the difference. It's the difference of capacity, okay? If you have a lot of photos, I don't know how many photos you have on your computer, but, you know, photos are pretty big.
Yeah.
And over time, they build up to quite a substantial amount of space.
Right.
So probably on a flash drive, where you're talking about a gigabyte or 2 gigabytes or 4.
I have one that's 1 and 1 that's 2.
2, right. You're probably not going to get much of your photo library on there. If it's very substantial. Now, with an external hard drive, you know, then you're talking about, if you're talking about a pocket drive, maybe you're talking about 20 or 40 or 60 gigabytes, which would be a pretty good size, pretty healthy photo library. If you're talking about just a drive you set on your desktop that you're not really concerned all that much about the portability, it could be as big or bigger as your internal hard drive. You know, it could be 200, 300, 400, I have a 500 gigabyte external hard drive. And with something like that, with a hard drive, with that kind of capacity, then you can actually relocate your entire photo collection to that external hard drive,
okay.
Leave the program on your internal hard drive, iPhoto, and tell iPhoto, you set this in iPhoto's preferences, that your library is out there on that external hard drive, which offloads those pictures from your internal hard drive and frees up a lot of space. And this is where the reader whose question was the subject of the column was in trouble. She had a fairly small internal hard drive and a really big a photo library. So she was running out of space on her internal hard drive, which is a bad thing for a number of reasons. A solution there was to get an external hard drive, move that photo library to that external hard drive, and just let iPhoto know that's where it is.
It says processor 1.42 gigahertz power. PC G4, memory 512 MB built-in.
Yeah, that's the speed of your processor and the amount of RAM that you have. But if you open up a Finder window there, and does it tell you how much free space is left?
About Finder, preferences, services?
So open up you've got your hard drive there, right? It says Macintosh hard drive or something like that.
Well, I opened up the Apple. It says about this Mac, and then it says more info.
Yeah, you want to determine the capacity of your hard drive.
Hard drive overview.
Say free space in there.
Got memory, L2 cache, speed, boot ROM version, serial number. Where would you?
Well,
under hardware?
Yeah, you're looking at the system profiler, I think, there. Here's an easy way to do it, okay? You have an icon for your internal hard drive, right? It says Macintosh hard drive or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay, so open that up. Double-click and open up a window.
All right. Well, It says my name, Mac hard drive. That's got applications, documents, library.
Right. But is there something on that? There should be something on that window that tells you how much space is being occupied and free.
It says night items, 28.56 gigabytes available at the bottom of that window.
All right. So that should mean that you've got about 28 gigabytes available on your internal hard drive.
Okay.
So that's a pretty good amount. You don't really at this point need to worry about offloading your iPhoto library, I don't think.
Right.
Unless you just want to do it to prepare for the future. But
I started transferring things when I was had a smaller computer. It's just the same thing when I opened up iPhoto Library. It says 61 items, 28.56 gigabytes available, which is the same thing it said.
Yeah, so you've got quite a lot of space there. You don't need to start worrying about that at this point.
All right. But they should transfer. I have a bunch already on a flash drive, but I can just open them when I plug that in, can't I?
As long as you've imported them into iPhoto, right?
No, I just imported them onto the. Right now they're just they're exported onto the.
Were they ever in iPhoto? Did you ever put them in your iPhoto library?
No, they were just on the hard drive.
Okay, well, so you're not going to see
old computer.
You're not going to see those in iPhoto until you import them into iPhoto.
When I plug the external drive back in, then I need to open up the iFolder and put them in there.
Yes, open up iPhoto, and add those photos to your library if you want to put them in iPhoto. Now you don't have to do that. And yes, if you plug them in, you'll see those picture files, and you can open those with any number of preview that is an included Apple program will open up those picture files, or any photo manipulation software like Photoshop Elements or HB Image Processor or Graphic Converter. Those will all open up those pictures. You don't have to import them into to iPhoto. Now, if you want to work with them in iPhoto, you probably have to import them into iPhoto. And the advantage of having them in iPhoto is that it makes it easy to keep track of them, right?
Yeah.
You've got a library with thumbnail shots of your pictures there, so, and they're dated and that kind of thing. So that's the whole idea behind iPhoto is to make it easier for you to keep track of all those pictures that you have.
Well, it does that when I've got this one from the last trip on the desktop, and when I open it up, if I open up the folder, I highlight all the pictures and go to File Open, and it'll give me four pictures at a time to the right of the picture that's open.
You're talking about iPhoto now, or you're talking about what?
These are the pictures that are just on the desktop.
That are on the desktop, right?
So when I highlight, say this has six, because I separated them into folders according to where we were on this trip. And if I highlight those six and go to Apple Open, it opens the first one, and it gives me, to the right, those little thumbnail sketches.
Right.
And so it's in preview,
yeah,
I think.
That's happening in preview, right.
Right.
That's a built-in program for looking at picture files and other things in Mac OS X. So, yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. If that meets your needs, that's fine.
And then I don't need to put them into iPhoto to put them on a CD to burn a CD, right? I can just burn them from...
No. In fact, you could just put a blank CD in there and drag as many photos over as will fit on that CD and burn it.
Okay.
The only reason the you know, there are two things, there are two reasons to use iPhoto. You don't have to use it at all. It's there and it's free, so you know, that's kind of nice. But it makes it easier to keep track of your photos because it puts them in a library and it dates them, and it gives you the chance to put captions on them and all that kind of stuff. And there are some basic photo manipulation tools in there, taking red eye out if people have red eye, or improving the color, or you know, improving the brightness, that kind of thing.
Well, Celeste, is there anyone else waiting right now?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll save my question for another time.
You know, you can always email me, too. Let me give you my email address. It's Kline, K-L-I-N-E, and then at news-gazette.com.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
You're welcome. And we do the show every month.
Right.
So she can play around and... You need some more help next month, that's also a possibility. This is the Afternoon Magazine, and next we're going to go to a listener on line 2 in Champaign. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi.
How can we help you?
I thought it was very nice of you to help that last caller.
I don't know how much I helped her, but I tried anyway.
That was very nice. I have a question. You said that Vista is now going to have anti-spyware and antivirus included in it, so you don't have to purchase those two extra programs?
No, I didn't necessarily say that. And in fact, you know, Microsoft wants to sell you the antivirus program that it's creating itself, right? It's not part of Vista.
Okay.
I think where you may have misheard me was
that,
I said that if you've got Windows XP and you've got an up-to-date antivirus program and up-to-date anti-spyware programs, you're probably just about as secure as to be in Vista. Yeah.
Right. Is that just kind of a business decision, you know, to get as much business as possible to – not incorporate, like, why didn't they back at the beginning, why didn't XP incorporate, or an operating system software, have these things embedded in it? It seems like the most logical way to do it. Why did that develop that way, that you had to have these separate programs that added to the work of the, you know, the end of the user?
Well, you're asking me a question that's beyond my knowledge because, you know, Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer don't call me up and discuss their business strategy with me. But I think you're right. And, you know, what you just said, I say right on, okay? Because, I think that all operating systems, particularly commercially sold operating systems, we're getting ripped off if we don't have antivirus, you know, let's say, malware, meaning any malicious software, viruses, spyware, adware. That should come in the operating system, if you ask me. So should a good backup program. You know, it's just now that Microsoft, with Vista and Apple, in its coming OS 10.5, are adding a decent backup program to their systems. I think those things should have been part of the system. And I imagine, though again, they haven't consulted me, I imagine you're exactly right. You know, it's a way to, and on Microsoft's part, since it's now selling, a security suite, it's a way to milk more money out of people. I think there was also some desire not to upset some of their third-party software vending partners, although having gone into the business now, Microsoft doesn't seem to be too worried about that anymore.
Okay. And lastly, I'm going to hang on to my XP operating systems for a while, like you said. Do you recommend? I was under the impression that Norton Antivirus and Spy Sweeper were the two best ones. Do you have any opinion on those? Are the best ones for the?
Well,
I
rarely endorse like a single product. Let me say that yeah, Norton is obviously the big dog, but there are a few others, including AVG, which is a version of which is free. Okay, that I think are pretty good as well. And certainly running something is better than and keeping it up to date is better than running nothing. As far as you know, anti-spyware goes, and I will put in a little plug here for a couple of programs because they're free. You know, I think SpyBot Search and Destroy, which has got in the game early and has been around and continually updated, and the free version of Ad-Aware, are both quite good. A lot of people like Spy Sweeper and speak very highly of it. And the good thing about, you know, any spyware, any adware programs is that unlike antivirus programs, they play well together, right? So you can run two or three of them. And in fact, you probably benefit from running two or three of them because none of them catch everything.
Oh, okay.
So I run SpyBot and Adware on my Windows machine.
SpyBot, okay.
SpyBot Search and Destroy.
Okay, right, right.
And then Ad-Aware. Make sure you get the hyphen in there because, you know, there are tricky companies out there that take that hyphen out and try and fool you with their nasty little programs.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Okay. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Greg Klein is our guest this afternoon. This is the program we do once a month. We call it Computers and You. Next, we're going to talk with a listener in Oak Forest on line four. Hi.
Oh, hello. Thank you very much for taking my call. We picked up an HP XP Microsoft on it last summer, and we had experiences with the kids. They're teenagers. Now, over at my brother's house, they got into trouble going into websites that they weren't supposed to. And we had a hard time trying to figure out which one of them it was. I was told that on my computer now, I can go into some place in the computer and find out what sites they've been visiting. I'll hang up and maybe jot down the things that you could help me out on this.
Okay.
Well, yeah, and in fact, unless they know how to get rid of it, and depending on how old they are, they just might know how to get rid of it. That's not the hardest thing in the world. If you look at Internet Explorer and go and look at the history file. Then you can pretty much tell where the last users have been there, unless they've taken the step of erasing that. So not too difficult, and that's probably I imagine that's all you want to do. It sounds like, I mean, you're talking about what they do when they when they're on the internet. So not too difficult.
And for this gentleman, if he wants to prevent these sites from being accessed in the future, can he do that?
Well, yes, and there are various ways he can do that. He can accomplish that. If he looks at the security settings of, I assume again that he's using Internet Explorer. If you look at the security settings there, you've got. Places where you can say these sites are trusted and these sites are restricted, and you plug addresses mm-hmm. in there to curtail some of that some of their ability to go places. You can get add-on software, third-party software that's for parental control that allows you to batten down the hatches on some of those places where and kinds of things you don't want your kids to go to. I will say, and I'm not suggesting that, he upgraded to Vista, but that, you know, that's a feature of Vista as well, that it's got, some more extensive parental controls in it. The other thing, he might think about doing is, I don't know if everybody operates on the same user account, on their home Windows XP machine. But you could set up separate accounts for different users, and some of those accounts you can limit what they can do when they're using the computer.
Okay.
So there are a number of steps you can take. But basically, if you just look at the history file in Internet Explorer, that'll tell you unless again the kids have gone in and erased it. That'll tell you where they've been.
Yeah. Some years ago, I remember having actually a number of children in the studio with me on one of these shows, and they knew so much, Greg. They were, you know, I think the youngest was maybe 8 or 9. And so they have a lot of time, and they're so used to this technology.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Yeah. So this is the Afternoon Magazine. If you've got a question about computers, give us a call. Greg Klein is our guest this afternoon. The numbers to call in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455 and 800-222-9455 if you're outside the local dialing area. Last month, I got a fax before the program. Unfortunately, I didn't get it until after I was off the air. So if that listener is listening in Effingham, I'm going to ask his or her questions. I don't know. There was no name attached to the fax. But anyway, the listener was sent this from Effingham, and he is looking for a used laptop for a daughter, for a college student, to use for word processing and internet access. And the listener wonders, you know, where can I look around for a used laptop? Local computer repair resale shop, eBay, other websites.
Mm-hmm. I'd say probably your best bet is eBay. that's where you find anything used now, right? And actually, there, you know, you'll find a vast array of available used laptops on there. There are some, some places locally that have, at least in the past, I know, sold used laptops. We had Computer Renaissance here, but I think eBay would be now. This is my reservation, is why buy a used laptop?
That's what I was going to ask you.
And it depends on how, I guess if you have a really strict budget, then you can only spend a few hundred dollars that, maybe you'd want to go that way. But the fact is you can get a new laptop for about a few hundred dollars now.
Yeah, maybe.
Even less than that,
really?
5 or 6.
Okay.
And in some cases, even a little less than that, depending on where you go. So it almost makes, no sense. And I'll say that in the past, I look at I glance at it occasionally just to see what's going on in that market, so to speak. And it always strikes me that the more useful used laptops on eBay are priced high for what I'd pay for a used laptop. And it's a little bit different than maybe even buying a used desktop because, that laptop's been moved around and it's subject to some abuse, degradation from abuse. So even if I found a good price, I'd want some sign that I was getting something from somebody who's got a pretty good reputation and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But eBay is what I'd suggest. But really, she ought to price new ones first, and see if you're within striking range. Because if you're within striking range, you might as well get a new one.
Yeah. What do you get for a $500 laptop?
You get a laptop that's plenty functional for just about anything that most people do. And in fact, when I talk to people about buying a new computer now, I say, look, if you're just going to do word processing and you're going to do web surfing, and even if you want to handle digital photos, okay, as opposed to movies or 3D games, which are a couple of pretty demanding things, if you just want to do the normal stuff that people do, the least expensive computer is now plenty capable of doing those things. If you want to give yourself some wiggle room, then buy a step up or two up from the bottom. But, generally most people don't need to worry about buying the latest and greatest machine with all the bells and whistles, mm-hmm. because even that least expensive laptop is going to have plenty of processing power. You probably ought to think about investing in a little more RAM, because they generally, you know, I think that Windows XP and certainly Windows Vista and Mac OS X, they all run better with more RAM. Sometimes your lower end laptops, although this has kind of gone by the wayside, will have as little as 256 megabytes of RAM. Most now are probably 512, but really a gigabyte is what those operating systems like. So, you know, if you get a lower end laptop and you can plan to double the RAM, which these days is not that expensive, then you're probably in pretty good shape. That's the one reservation, I guess, I'd have about some of the lower-end laptops. Other than that, you're probably going to get wireless communications capability in that lower-end laptop. That's almost standard now. Mm-hmm. You're probably going to get a drive that at least reads DVDs and burns CDs. As I said, the processor is probably going to be plenty capable. Most of them have a decent screen now. So generally, even at the lower end, if you just do the normal stuff that most people like to do, you're going to get plenty of machine even at the on the bottom line.
Okay, very good. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Greg Klein is our guest this afternoon in this portion of the program. This is our monthly program on computers. Greg is a science and technology reporter for the News Gazette. He also writes a couple of columns for the newspaper about computing. They run on Mondays in the circuit section of the paper. One is a question and answer column, the other a column featuring useful and interesting websites. If you'd like to join us this afternoon with a question about computers, give us a call. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Anywhere else, toll-free, 800-222-9455. 333-WILL, 800-222-WILL.
I have a little iPhoto cheat sheet that one of the good folks here handed me that I might pass on to that lady. And if you go to iPhoto Preferences Advanced tab, there's a setting in there, copy files to iPhoto Library. And that's how you can – I said you don't have to use iPhoto if you don't want all your photos going into that iPhoto Library. That's the way you can stop that. He makes the suggestion of burning photos to CD, which we talked a little bit about, and make two copies. That's not a bad idea either, considering that CDs, you know, burnable CDs cost pennies now. And it's not like you have negatives and prints anymore to rely on. Those digital photos are your negatives and prints, so to speak. And checking those CDs to make sure they're on there before you delete the originals from iPhoto and empty iPhoto's trash. So,
okay.
And then you can import the photos from the CDs as thumbnails into iPhoto, but you're not importing the whole photo. You're importing, in essence, say, a shortcut or a pointer to those photos on the CD. Or she could do that with her flash drive, and then if you want to, you can copy those.
Yeah.
You can check that setting that we talked about in the beginning, and actually have those photos copied into the iPhoto Library.
Yeah.
But there are some ways of handling that. But again, the issue is. It only becomes an issue when you start to run out of hard drive space, right? She has plenty of hard drive space. If I were her, I would just be using iPhoto both to store and manage my photos. But at some point, when you get low on hard drive space, there are other ways of handling it so that you're not taking up all that space with those photos.
Let's talk with some other listeners. Next, we go to Urbana. Listener on line one, hi.
Hello. I have a couple of questions. One of them concerns the backup of the hard drive. We have had burglaries in our neighborhood, and we're going to be going out of town. So we want to, if we lose the computer, we would at least have the files.
Right.
So I have heard terms like external hard drive and flash drive and don't know much about either one of them.
What operating system do you run there, sir?
XP.
Windows XP? Okay. So, you know, an external hard drive is just, in your computer, there's a hard drive. It's got Windows XP on it and all your stuff, you know, your programs and your documents and all that kind of thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And an external hard drive is just a hard drive that's not in your computer. It's outside in a case that these days is not that big, about the size of a book, basically. Some of them are about the size of a paperback book, mm-hmm. even. And it connects to your computer probably by – how old is your computer?
Several years.
Oh, several years, meaning five, six?
Four.
Four. Well, you might be okay. It probably connects to your computer by a USB port. That's kind of a rectangular end. Do you know what I mean when I say that?
Haven't looked back there.
Well, if you look back there, there are probably some ports on the back of your computer that are small rectangles, basically.
Okay.
And those are USB ports. And generally, that hard drive will have a USB port, and you plug one end of the cable into that, and you plug the other end into your Windows machine, and then it'll recognize it as an external hard drive and give it another drive letter, depending on, you know, what letters your other drives have already. You know,
there's C, only one drive.
Right, that's your C drive, but then you probably got a CD drive in there.
That's right.
So it's probably got a letter, and if this is a CD drive, pretty much the only other drive you have, do you know?
Yeah, that's it.
So that's probably drive D, and that it would probably make that external hard drive drive E. But
okay.
The question I have is, since your computer is kind of on the border, there used to be USB 1.1, and it was the earlier standard, and it was kind of slow in how fast it could move things back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's USB 2, and it's much, much, much faster. Now, USB 1.1, you probably wouldn't want to, try and work with an external hard drive over that slow a connection. But if it's USB 2, then you'd be fine. And what you would do is, that this is my suggestion, and in fact, I suggest this now for people for backup purposes just generally, is you would get something that's called cloning software, okay? Again, I'm not really endorsing a particular kind, but Norton Ghost is a well-known piece of software that does this. And what it would do is you can set it to make an exact copy of your internal hard drive onto that external hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
Then you're going away, you say, you unplug that external hard drive and take it with you. Or you leave it with someone for safekeeping, or, you know, put it in the wall safe or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you a copy of an exact copy of everything that's on your internal hard drive, so that if anybody breaks in and takes your computer, you've got it. It's also great if your internal hard drive fails, because now you got a copy, and mm-hmm. you just copy it back onto your new internal hard drive. So,
mm-hmm. How do you find out what USB 1.1 or 2 is?
Well, whether you've got 1.1 or 1.2, you should be able to go into, if you go to, you're using Windows XP, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the same. I'm in front of a Windows 2000 machine here, but I think the same thing will work here. If you go to Start and then Programs, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then to Accessories,
yeah,
right? And then you see System Tools.
Yes.
And you see System Information.
Okay.
And you call up that System Information program, and then I would imagine it's in either Hardware Resources or, no, Components probably. And it's got a thing in there, ports. It's also got USB, and there should be information in there that will that will tell you what kind of USB you've got.
Is it simply a matter of speed? It's not a matter of functionality.
Right, exactly. In fact, those hard drives generally will work over. I don't see that it tells you whether it's 1.1 or 1.2 here.
Are we talking about a difference in a?
Yeah, it's a speed difference.
Eight hours in one case.
Right. And if you were only going to do it once, like when you're going away on vacation or something like that, maybe you can live with that.
Overnight.
Yeah. But if you're going to use it on a regular basis for like backup, then you really wouldn't want to deal with that slower 1.1 standard. So I would determine that. And let me say one other thing then in closing, if you have USB 1.1 ports, you don't have a USB 2.0 port, mm-hmm. you can, for very little money, and I'm talking, $15, $20, $25, you can get a card that has USB 2.0 ports on it that you can drop into one of the slots that's open inside your computer that would give you, that speed.
Okay.
So, that's kind of that might be a minor expense in trying to do what we've been talking about here.
Okay. There we have to leave it. We're out of time. Greg, thank you very much. You want to give folks your email?
It's Kline, Kline, @news-gazette.com.